Hello, it's the year 2024. It's me, Matt Stewart, and we've sold out all four of our Do Go Ons live at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. But if you want to see me, you can do that. The show's called Dry Dryer, and we're at a new venue now. It's called The Grace Darling. Me and Sarenjaya Marnett, it's so much fun. The show's getting real good, I reckon. It's been heaps of fun, so we'd love to see you there. Use the discount code Do Go On for cheaper tickets. Also, we've now got the Do Go On quiz show. It's up online on the Stupid Old channel, so please check it out. Getting some lovely feedback so far. Please give it a watch, subscribe to the channel, maybe even comment on it, and, you know, feed those algorithm gods if you can. But love to see a Dry Dryer in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. Check out the quiz show. Anyway, let's get on with this show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is David Warnicki. I'm here with Matt Stewart and Jess Perkins. Oh, forgot your last name there.
I was going to say, we've been doing this for a long time now and friends for even longer. Forgot my name.
Was thinking of going middle name, but then I realised I hadn't given one to Matt, so bailed on it pretty late.
Fair enough.
Sorry about
and
that.
If you go Jess, then you can't say middle name. That just seems weird. You got to go Jessica, and I don't like that. Oh, yeah, okay. I can see where you went wrong. I'm sorry for jumping to conclusions.
We can go. We can start again.
Yeah.
We really can.
Start fresh.
It's good to be back in the pod studio. I'm back from overseas. I went to Mexico and Cuba. That was a good time.
Yeah, I wonder if the listeners could tell. They could hear any of those trumpets in the background.
From the last few weeks.
From the last few weeks.
And I was recording on location.
Yeah,
I demanded to be on a beach every time.
You were phoning it in.
Which was weird because we were like, Dave, there's actually a better connection from the hotel. And you're like, no. From the beach.
The beach is calling.
Matt's been in Perth as well and I've been holding...
On the beach.
Holding down the fort in Melbourne. On the beach.
I reckon I'd be surprised if you had more burritos in Mexico than I did in Perth.
Really? I had zero burritos in Mexico.
Lots of tacos.
All about the tacos.
There was one day I had two burritos in the one day.
You say it like it's a bad thing.
No. I certainly didn't intend it that way. They were different burritos.
I have, when I was in Italy, I ate pizza at least twice a day. Mm. And gelato also at least once.
Well, you getting pizza in Italy is very similar to me getting burritos in Perth.
Exactly. It's like winning.
It's the culture.
Yeah.
It'd be offensive to say no.
Yeah, you simply must.
I wasn't going into shops and asking. People were offering, walking down the street, as is Perth culture.
Mm.
They go, burrito, sir? And what do you say?
I've already had one.
Can you say that?
No.
Not in Perth culture.
No.
That's a slap in the face.
So offensive.
Mm.
You simply mustn't.
You simply mustn't.
And that is why Perth is the greatest Australian city.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Burritos with every meal.
Guilt-free burritos.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you did the right thing.
Thank you.
Mm. Mm.
Glad someone gets it.
But it is good to be back. It is good to be back in the pod studio. Jess has already commented on my tan. Thank you.
Yeah, you're looking great.
From all those beach recordings.
You're glowing.
We've both been on the beach and we both look,
much the same.
Much, to be honest.
Somehow I look paler.
Yeah, I don't know how you did it.
Mm.
Well done.
Thank you.
Sun smart.
SPF 100.
and 50.
Oh.
What I did was basically not going out until the sun went down.
Yeah, okay. All right. That's clever.
Yeah.
They have daylight savings over there.
No, so it's 3 hours different. I'm genuinely the thing that makes you feel tired when you travel.
Jet lag.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Where I came from was 17 hours behind.
And?
I feel fucking great.
That's almost far enough around that you're back to where you started, though.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's can't fault that logic.
Yeah, that's how time works. That is definitely how time works.
If you stay awake for 24 hours, you just reset.
Yeah.
That's what I find when I do those late night radio gigs. I'm awake for 24 hours.
Yeah, you're tired, tired. It hits 24 and you go, I'm feeling great.
I'm good, baby. Let's keep going.
It's Matt's turn to report on a topic that's been suggested by one of the listeners.
And I wrote a question. I wrote it at the very beginning. This is the question. It might be a little bit contentious. Let's see. Let's find out.
Okay. It's exciting.
What singer is defined by a color more than any other?
Shakira.
Pink.
Yeah, pink. See, the pink. I thought there was trouble with pink.
Why?
Well, I'm like, That probably is a good answer.
But it's not the correct answer.
No, Green Day.
Prince.
Prince is the other good one. Yeah, purple,
fuck,
right? No, but
I also thought Prince and I...
Now I understand why this is contentious.
So,
the colour.
Give you one more guess each and then we'll crack on.
Eiffel 65, I'm Blue, Dubba Dee, Dubba Die.
I second that answer.
No, that's... You did... I wrote down a few that I thought... Of as well. I put
Green
down,
Day.
I put Prince, Pink, Eiffel 65.
I can't believe you thought of that.
We spent too much time together.
Yeah.
Coldplay, Yellow.
But it is
Michael Jackson.
Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash.
The Man in Black.
Black, okay.
Oh, the...
Awesome. I like Johnny Cash.
You
I
won't like by his... the end of this.
I
All
like...
right.
Oh.
It's another one where we ruin people's heroes.
No, I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, as in. I like when I say I like Johnny Cash.
Jess is already backpedaling because she knows what's going to come now.
Well, because I've seen Walk the Line.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah.
Is it called Walk the Line?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think, and that, I mean, that.
And I've seen Dewey Cox?
Yeah.
Walk Hard.
Walk Hard. Thank you.
That's a funny movie.
Fuck, that's a funny movie. It's so stupid.
So The Man in Black, I didn't know he was called The Man in Black.
Yeah.
Oh, right. We had a song called The Man in Black and he's just famously... Nearly always wore black through his career. And I think he said he did that because it was easy to clean.
Yeah.
But it was also like it all came into his bad boy image.
Doesn't show up sweat marks either.
Real smart. That's
so smart.
Really?
Slimming.
If you want a bad boy image, you wear all white and you keep the blood stains.
Yeah. It's like Andrew WK.
Oh, yeah.
Dave, whose blood?
Anyone's. He's just a bad, bad boy.
Wow. Okay.
Any blood that... People didn't want to give. He's not at the blood bank taking people's blood because that would make him a good boy. He is not into that.
That would make him a good boy.
Good boy, Johnny.
I don't know what that sound was that came out of my mouth, but
it was a great sound. Is there anything you guys know that you want to...
I just remember we've mentioned Johnny before on the Elvis Presley episode there. Million Dollar Quartet.
Yes, I didn't go into that because we've covered it before. But
which I wasn't there for.
Because
Meso was reporting.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, no, he wasn't reporting. He was guesting.
It was just a famous moment that was where, yeah. And I think it's been made to be a bigger thing than it was now. It was in the 50s at Sun Records Studio, I think. And it was Johnny Cash, Elvis. Was it Carl Perkins and... I'll look that up before the end of the episode. Anyway, I remember we talked about it before, so I thought it would be boring to go through again. Let's start at the beginning.
Great place to start.
Johnny Cash was... What, do you know what his real name is?
John.
Ethan.
Cash.
Ethan.
Cash is right, but his actual...
Wait.
Really, Cash is the... You think that out of those, Cash is the made-up?
Yeah.
Not
Where
Johnny.
Where did you get John from? Was John a middle name?
No. He was born. His parents couldn't agree on his name, so his name on his birth certificate is the initials JR, not standing for anything in particular. I think I saw some different sources said different things, like they were arguing about different names. His dad's name was Ray, so I think the R
was Ray. I think the dad maybe wanted Ray, and maybe the mum wanted John. His parents were Ray and Carrie Rivers Cash.
Rivers of Cash.
Rivers of Cash.
Wow.
He was born on the 26th of Feb, 1932, in Kingsland, Arkansas. And he lived his early years in a small house on a...
Whose?
Oh, sorry. I thought that, like, his parents, I was going to say, but you were saying house.
Whose house?
And they were on a 20-acre cotton farm. Life was tough. The whole family worked the fields. You know, they were very working class, quite poor, and, you know, things were rough. The small house, I think I read it was a 5-room house, and he was one of 7 kids.
Oh. Wow, there. Cash is a real ironic name.
Yeah.
Too many kids.
Do they know what was causing it? Jess is doing the international symbol for sex.
Which is, of course, the finger dick into the hand mutt.
I was like, I won't say it, but I hope Matt will.
I think the first time I said that was on the Elvis episode. In 1944, when Cash was 12, his older brother Jack, which you'd probably remember this from his older brother Jack, who he really looked up to, was involved in a tragic accident. Mm. While Jack was cutting wood one weekend, he was pulled into a table saw and he was cut badly, and a week later passed away from the injuries.
Oh, God, you're pointing to your chest. Did he get cut in half?
I don't think fully in half, but yeah.
Oh.
The thing I was reading was like he dragged himself along the floor and apparently that made it worse. He had a big wound and he was dragging himself over a dirty floor, which obviously...
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's awful.
According to biography.com, which is one of my main resources in this report, he became more introspective. This is Johnny, or JR at this stage. He became more introspective afterwards and began to spend more time alone, writing stories and sketches.
He's writing sketches.
Yeah, I know. I read that and a couple of different things saying how he wrote sketches. I'm like, I don't know what that means in America, but it seems...
I would assume he's just sketching.
Yeah, drawing sketches.
When you
sketches.
Say writing a sketch, it's like a comedy sketch. I mean, I didn't see him as much of a comedic
and
performer.
And it's funny, I mean, everyone, after his brother died, he became more introspective and started writing comedy sketches.
That doesn't really, they don't line up, do they?
Jack's deathbed words about seeing angels affected him deeply on a spiritual level, according to biography.com.
I saw angels and they told me to ask you to write more comedy sketches.
Yeah. He's like, what could we do with this? Say there's a fish, right? back then, comedy sketches were about anything. It was a wild time.
Unlike now.
Nah, now they're very specifically all about shopkeepers. As we know the rules.
We all know the rules.
We know what we signed up for. Around this time, he began writing his first songs, and his mum, also a devout Christian, a very Christian family. I think his brother Jack was likely to become a preacher. He was going down that path, very spiritual guy. And I think, Johnny really took it on board when his brother was seeing angels. He's like, well, this confirms it. So, yeah, his mum sensed some talent and got scraped together some money and sent him to singing lessons. But according to biography.com, after just 3 lessons, his teacher, enthralled with Cash's already unique singing style, told him to stop taking lessons and to never deviate from his natural voice.
Wow.
Which is cool.
That's really cool.
Idiot.
Not good business.
Narrable business.
Narrable business. Absolutely narrable.
I was hoping you wouldn't pick up on that.
That's a portmanteau of terrible and
not good business.
Not good.
Yep.
Which is good because you can't fully get all of that meaning in just terrible.
You simply can't.
When you throw in not good, then it becomes clear as to what you're saying.
Terrible business.
Narrable. You get the nuance of narrable.
What a moron. Take the money.
What a moron. What a moron.
Which is a not good not moron. Good moron.
Which is a moron whose name is Nora.
Cash graduated high school in 1950 with his diploma displaying his birth name, J.R. Cash. He worked briefly in Pontiac, Michigan, which I guess is where Pontiacs are named after, at an auto body plant before enlisting in the U.S. Air Force. Because Michigan's that's the home of the automotive industry in America, I think. Like Detroit, Motown and all that, isn't it? Detroit,
yeah, I Michigan? Think sort of classically. Couldn't tell you if it's
yeah, no, I'm not sure if it still is, but I think, yeah, back in the day. It was here in the Air Force that he was given, he first gave himself the name John, as they would not take on a recruit with initials for a name, which I think is a bit rich coming from an organization known as the U.S. Air Force. It's the joke I wrote in this report.
That's good. That's
and when you wrote that, when you wrote it?
I was with Evan just down the hallway, and yep. I said, Evan, I've written the joke of the report. You want to hear it? And he said, and it was so hot in the office that we were delirious.
He thought it was good.
He thought it was good. And he was wrong. He was wrong, and I'm willing to admit that.
No, I love it. I love anyway, it so much.
Anyway, so JR became John R. Cash, which is funny because later he became known as John E. Cash. That was,
Oh,
I decided against that one. I didn't write it down.
You said it anyway.
Evan, I don't want to call you over twice in 1 minute, but...
I've done it again.
We were rolling. No.
For him.
Like, I mean, we were... It was ironic laughter, Jess. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even give me that, you dog. Sorry, you nog.
Not good dog.
Not good dog. Now a recruit, Cash was sent to Lackland Air Force Base in Texas for training. This is where he met Vivian Liberto. Not on the base, but at a local San Antonio roller skating rink.
Oh.
Apparently, he asked if he could skate near her.
Near her.
And she said, maybe that's not what he said. He's like, can I go for a skate with you? And she said he wasn't a good skater, but he hummed along to the tune real good, and it really pricked her ears up.
Aw, what a cute way to meet.
They dated.
Not like the kids these days on their interwebs. Tell you what.
Probably meeting on like some sort of a digital roller skating rink, if you know what I mean.
Some sort of skating forum. Can I type my words near yours? Okay.
Stranger danger. Stranger danger.
Back away. Roll away.
They dated for a few weeks before Cash was sent to West Germany, where he remained for 3 years working. In communications, intercepting and deciphering Soviet radio messages. Apparently, he was a natural at this.
Oh.
Intercepting their Morse codes and stuff. Through his time in Germany, Cash and Liberto sent frequent love letters to each other, which have since been published, a lot of them.
Okay, I was thinking about this morning. You know how often when a famous artist or a writer or a musician in this case dies, afterwards their letters are published? Do you think that when people die, say in 50 years that are famous now, people will hack their email and their family will give permission
Facebook message to
publish that?
Yeah, maybe. Like, I don't...
Because with letters, like it doesn't...
a betrayal of privacy.
Yeah, but see, I feel that way. It is a betrayal of privacy with email. But with letters, I'm like, yeah, that's cool, publish that. But they probably never wanted us to read them.
No, I feel a bit uncomfortable about them. I think when time goes on and if they're like... I guess there's probably a difference. People go, they're such an historically important person that the public, it's like a public interest thing, and they're dead, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, something a bit about it's a little uncomfortable.
I give you guys permission to hack my email,
but at the same time,
I don't want to.
I think you know, just like
subscriptions for porn.
Yeah, because that's how you subscribe to porn through email.
Is it really?
Yes,
dear,
I just
porn,
told you.
More porn, please. Signed, Dave.
Thank you for that latest batch of porn. I especially enjoyed the second part. More of that. Love, Dave.
More porn.
One more porn, please.
I've had my fill.
Oh, always room for one more porn. While in Germany, Cash also kept himself busy working on his guitar skills. He formed a band called the Landsberg Barbarians, named after the Bavarian town where he was stationed, which is Landsberg, obviously. Landsberg, Bavaria, which I, maybe that's Landsberg Barbarians is Landsberg Bavarians. It's a little plain word, I suppose. That's possibly not true. They played shows for the fellow servicemen and also local Germans. Biography.com quoted Cash as later saying, "We were terrible, but the Löwenbräu, or Löwenbräu beer will make you feel like you're great." "We'd take our instruments to these honky-tonks and play until they threw us out or a fight started."
I mean, that's actually not bad. I was going to tease you and be like, oh, okay, we're doing impressions now, but that was pretty good.
Yeah, keep doing that. That's good.
I like, yeah, you're like a real, to us, it's like, that sort of sounds American. To Americans, it'd be like, what is that?
What are you doing?
Like when you hear the Australian accent, like, oh, yeah, good dolly, mate. Yeah. He is Art Gale. And you're like, what the fuck is that?
So I will say, it's great when you're overseas and you do hear the Australian accent. Like I was on a bus going back to the airport on the trip I just got back from, and then you just hear this guy get on and go, "Excuse me, this bus got Wi-Fi?" So I was just like, cringe.
You're like, oh,
don't let him hear me talk.
My people.
I don't want to sound like that. Wi-Fi.
Oi. You got Wi-Fi?
Oh, Wi-Fi. It was bad.
It's fine. I kind of, it depends on the mood, but sometimes you're like, oh, I'm overseas to not be hearing Australians talk. But Australians are such broad travellers. But I remember one time loving the accent when I was in Germany. I've probably mentioned this before. So this metal festival called Wacken or Varken, I think.
Wacken?
A Rose Tattoo, Angry Anderson's band.
Yep.
Was playing.
And they're Australian.
And they're an Aussie band. They came out, and I hadn't heard the Australian accent for a few months. And they came out, and the bass player's wearing overalls with like maybe like a blue singlet. And he comes out and goes, "Check one fucking two." And it just like blew my hair back. I was like, whoa.
And a little tear rolled into your eye, and you just started singing the national anthem.
"Check one fucking two. There's no fucking Wi-Fi backstage."
That's brilliant.
"Check one
fucking two.
Fucking two." Yeah, it's like one of those, you know, those little moments just fully like imprinted in your mind. I can picture everything about it.
I love it. It's a good memory.
Motorhead headlined that festival.
No.
Yeah, it was sick. Anyway, so Cash left the Air Force in 1954 and was reunited with Liberto, and they soon married.
Oh, she waited for him.
Well, I think they were both sleeping around. He would often, apparently in a lot of these letters, he'd be like, going, I got really drunk, I'm really sorry, won't happen again. And I think she said since that she was also, you know, they weren't exclusive. I mean, they dated for 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It's pretty wild that they got, you know, he came back and they got married soon after. And kind of didn't, you know, some of that stuff probably didn't bode super well for the future. Settling down in Memphis, Tennessee, Cash worked as a salesman. I think he went door-to-door selling, like, kitchen goods or something like that, playing music on the side with Marshall Grant, Red Knoedel, which is a fucking great name.
Knoedel.
And Luther Perkins.
Hey!
Who were workmates of Cash's mechanic brother, Roy. Johnny was the front man with a guitar he paid 20 Deutschmarks for, which is around $5 US at the time. Shit. Knoedel on steel guitar, Grant on upright bass, and Perkins on electric guitar.
Yeah.
And apparently Perkins...
the coolest.
Yeah, well, apparently... according to one source, at least, Perkins was responsible for that chuka-choo, 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 like that iconic Cash sound.
And it's been passed down in my family ever since.
Yeah.
You're well known to do the chuka-choo, chuka-choo, chuka-choo.
I do that all the time.
The guitar sounding like a steam train.
Do you guys ever listen to me? I'm always doing that.
Yeah, you are. You're always underneath us.
Always chugging along.
Yeah, I just keep
boom,
chugging.
Chugga boom, chugga boom, chugga boom, chugga boom, chugga boom.
And we just keep talking. No one ever addressed it until now.
It's a family thing. I get it now.
Yeah.
I was listening to heaps of his albums over the last little while, and in a live album, he just played Walk the Line, and then he said about that boom chicka sound, which sort of makes it sound like it was more his thing, but I think he was joking. He goes, people ask me why I did the boom chicka on that record. He didn't say boom chicka, he made the sound.
Uh-huh.
It's because we couldn't afford a drummer on that session. And the people chuckled and he chuckled. So maybe it was just some banter. But anyway, good stuff.
Good stuff.
I can see that was one of his early sketches.
He's funny.
He's funny.
He also goes, and people ask why at the start of each chorus I went, you know, I've been in Walk
Line.
He goes, that was just because I was trying to find the key.
I mean, don't give away all your secrets.
Wow. Did he ever find the key or was he locked out? And that one was inspired by my good friend, J.R. Cash.
Oh.
So 1954, Elvis released his first record on the Sun Records label. And I guess this was around the time of that Million Dollar Quartet that we've been talking so much about. And it kicked off Elvis mania and increased interest in the Sun Records label. That year or the next, I've read it in two different, anyway, it doesn't matter. Cash and his band went into Sun Records to audition. I read somewhere that they went in unannounced and just sort of went, give us an audition.
Beat down the door.
Started playing in reception.
Yeah.
The manager came out.
And Sam Phillips, the guy, came out and he goes, all right, I'll hear you guys. Knoedl, which is a real shame.
Totally.
he yodeled. Knoedl the yodeler. Yeah, he bailed on the audition due to nerves and fears that he would hold the group back. Oh. And also, obviously, he had his yodeling career to think about.
Mm-hmm.
You would have heard of him, the yodeling mechanic.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Talking to you like you don't know.
I've got his poster up in my workshop.
Yeah. left just the three men. They called themselves the Tennessee Three, but were convinced by Phillips to call themselves...
Do you reckon that's why Knoedl left?
Yeah.
I'm not even included in the band name.
How do you know? I mean, could it be any of us three?
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, we all know.
I mean, they did have three guitarists in a group of four.
Was he the... Which one? What did Knoedl play?
It was steel guitar.
No one needs that.
No.
Yeah, there's the electric
and
the
acoustic. As long as you've got electric, Perkins.
As long as you've got a boom chicka player.
Yeah, you need the boom chicka.
Sorry, Matt, I cut you off there. There was the Tennessee Three
But they were convinced by Phillips to call themselves Johnny Cash and the Tennessee Two.
Oh.
Again, Knoedl was like, what the fuck? You could have just kept three and I could have come back.
Now one's definitely Johnny.
Yeah. We've narrowed
it
down.
There's only two spots left. Are we getting rid of the boom chicka boom chicka guy?
I don't think so. It's me and the fucking bass player. All right.
All right, yeah. Do we need a bass player in a band? Or another guitar?
Huh?
I think we all know the answer. Get out, Mr. Bass.
Yeah, get out.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I misjudged that.
Oh, I'm outside now.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
Right, fine. Oh, where is everyone?
How am I going to tell my wife?
I'm locked out and I can't find the key. Oh, there it is. I just can't get it. Johnny makes it look so easy. I don't think we've heard the last of Red Knoedl. Am I right, Matt? He's coming back, surely.
We've heard the last of Red Knoedl. Well, now, obviously, there's too much, and we will do his own report.
Oh, of course.
About the mechanicking yodeler. As he was called. How he was advertised.
Was that a K-I-N-G? The Mechanic King?
Yeah, the Mechanic King.
Yodeler.
Yeah.
That's the most Jess obviously has. The Mechanic King Yodeler.
Stop
it. This sort of goes along with what you were saying before, going Cash feels like obviously the made-up part, because according to biography.com, upon first meeting Johnny Cash, Phillips thought that Johnny had made up his last name. It sounded to him like Johnny Dollar or Johnny Guitar, like quite a ridiculous made-up name. But obviously the cash part was real and can be traced back 1,000 years to Scotland and to the ancient kingdom of Fife. It was Johnny that was the invention, which we've already discussed. Phillips liked them, but apparently wasn't happy with their gospel-style songs, telling them to come back with an original tune, which they did, presenting the cash-penned Hey Porter, which Phillips liked, and consequently released as their first single. Apparently Cash came home to his pregnant wife, who was pregnant with their first kid, Vivian, excitedly telling her, "Baby, we're cutting a record." Next came Cry, 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 which became their first charting song, peaking at number 14 on the US country charts, which was followed by, I found one list that looked like a dozen in a row, top 10 singles on the country charts. And that didn't include the B-sides, which a lot of them also charted.
Wow.
So just
taking off.
Real hot streak. And quite a few of those crossed over into the mainstream charts as well, including one of the early singles was I Walk the Line, which was number one on the country charts and, yeah, top, I think a top 20 hit on the mainstream charts. I think I read that it was inspired by Cash hearing a Bavarian song played backwards accidentally, maybe?
Which sounds, and then he heard the devil.
I Walk the Line. Oh, wow.
Yeah, German backwards. Sounds like
very English.
English. Boom chicka boom chicka. The success led to endless touring and time away from his young family. According to an article on VCStar.com covering the marriage from Vivian's point of view, which is a real heartbreaking read, the tours also drew women, and when Vivian asked Johnny if he was ever tempted, he told her, "Not to worry, I walk the line for you," is what he said to her. Which obviously led to that song being written. Apparently Johnny asked Vivian to write down the lyrics while they were driving along. In the late 1950s, Cash was lured away from Sun Records by Columbia Records with big cash, big dollars. He relocated his young family, which by the early 1960s included four daughters, Roseanne, Kathy, Cindy, and Tara. Roseanne herself went on to be a multi-Grammy Award-winning country singer.
Roseanne Cash.
Yep.
Wow.
But he was on the road for the majority of the year by this stage. I think he saw some saying 300 nights a year. He'd be playing gigs, which is wild.
10 months a year. Wow.
His band became the Tennessee Three in 59 or 60 when drummer W.S. Holland joined.
Oh, sorry, I thought Red had gotten a call up. No. Red sees an advertiser, he turns up to the gig. Huh? A drummer? Oh, fuck!
But you need another guitarist, right, guys?
Oh, the one thing you sound's lacking. Another guitar.
Another guitar.
Oh, fuck! I learned 6 new instruments and not one of them is a drum.
Oh, fuck!
Fuck!
Don't you want the clarinet? No? Fucking hell.
Do you need a flautist?
No.
Fuck!
Fuck.
I learnt the viola.
Huh?
I thought that was very rock and roll.
Oh, I learnt the harpsichord. No one's played this in 200 years.
I got a lute.
Fuck.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether it's your first ever website or your business is expanding, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website and engage with your audience.
Jess, before you're jumping, Dave, can you say entrepreneurs again? It sounds so good.
Entrepreneurs.
Oh my God.
God, he's good.
Jeez.
If it feels a bit overwhelming to start your own website, don't worry. You can get help with written content on your website with Squarespace AI. generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You explain what your site's about, you choose your tone, you enter what you need, and you get short and long form text. How cool is that?
Oh my God, can Squarespace just do my life?
It'd be good if it could do my taxes.
Hey, you can easily manage your clients and invoices. Two things that I definitely have, from vetting leads to receiving payment via invoices in one streamlined and customizable workflow.
Sorry, Matt, can you pronounce streamlined for me again?
Streamlined.
Beautiful.
Was that closer?
Yeah, in that it was the word.
Okay.
And not streamlined. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell membership or courses, or you can sell files that your customers can download, like PDFs, music, ebooks.
Right, Jess, can I just get you to say the word courses again?
Courses.
Nailed it. Head to squarespace.com/dogoon for a free trial and to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/dogoon.
Oh my God.
On these tours that Johnny Cash is going on, his band would often be accompanied by June Carter now. You're familiar with her? Cash first saw her years earlier performing with her family band, who was like an iconic country band, which I didn't realize. Generations of Carters played in this band.
Okay.
From what I read, though, Carter didn't hear of Cash until Elvis Presley mentioned him to her. This is according to this. This feels. It says this. I found a couple of websites saying they were quoting the liner notes of a CD, which were written by June Carter. But this was off dangerousminds.net. So possibly a myth, but you know, it was typed up so nicely that I like to believe it. In these notes, Carter was talking about how she was on tour with Elvis before meeting Cash, or even hearing of Cash, when she found Elvis trying to tune his guitar while humming like Cash. And according to Carter, she asked him what the weird humming sound was all about, and Elvis replied, "That's what drives the girls crazy. Cash don't have to move a muscle. He just sings and stands there." I don't know this Johnny Cash, Carter replied. And Elvis said, "Oh, you'll know Cash. The whole world will know Johnny Cash. He's a friend of mine."
It sounds like an evil guy.
Yeah.
He's just been spread. "Oh, you'll know Cash. The whole world will know Cash. You'll pay Cash."
So the whole tour, Carter's first with Cash. They went into small cafes throughout the South, and Elvis played Johnny Cash on the jukebox. So when Carter met him soon after and they started eventually tour together, she felt like she already knew him. But they were both already married at the time, but there was already feelings between the two.
Chemistry.
Yeah.
There was
a connection. You normally hear about this as like the great love story, and it does definitely seem to be, but I can't help but feel for Vivian, who is home 10 months of the year bringing up the four kids by herself while her husband's gone around fucking about.
And June Carter has a husband and kids as well.
She did have kids. Yeah, great. Sorry, this isn't the bloody Carter Cash report, mate.
I'm pretty sure.
In 1963, June Carter co-wrote a song about her falling for Cash. This is while Cash was still married. Though he was still married to Vivian. I should have just waited till the very next sentence. June's sister Anita released the song without much success. The story goes that Cash heard the song titled Love's Ring of Fire and later had a dream about the song, only in his dream it was accompanied by mariachi-style horns or trumpets. When the song failed to become a hit for Anita, Cash recorded the song as he dreamt it, and it went on to become one of his biggest hits. Iconic Ring of Fire.
Did it feature Red on trumpet?
So sorry.
He learnt it.
He learnt it. And he still didn't get the fucking...
Oh, fuck!
Red's dead.
You need
baby.
Trumpets. I play the fucking trumpet.
Huh?
Oh, fuck off. Now this is feeling personal.
You're going to get a mariachi player instead. For fuck's sake.
The 60s were a tough time, a rough time for Johnny and Vivian. Cash was abusing drugs and alcohol.
He was like, fuck you, drugs. You're nothing. Alcohol, you can fuck off too.
I don't need you in my life. Is that what happened?
Is that what he said? Did he throw a bottle of whiskey in the bin?
That's where you belong, whiskey.
I wouldn't like to be treated that way. That is abuse.
You don't want to be thrown in the bin.
I don't want to be thrown in the bin.
No, that is true.
Nobody puts Baber in the corner and nobody puts Jesse in the bin.
Nobody puts bottle in the bin.
Bopper in the bin.
He was sleeping around and increasingly in trouble with the law, all while his wife, Vivian, was home with their four kids. So this kind of bummed me out a bit, but during these times, his relationship with June Carter began as well. So there was a gross overlap, I think.
So multiple affairs.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, it's at least one of them went on to be a long-lasting marriage. According to the VC Star article, initially Vivian denied it. She was the one Johnny walked the line for. But then she started noticing warning signs, like Johnny would spend less and less time at their family home, and then she found receipts for thousands of dollars of gifts for June. Ugh, it's just such a gross...
He spent less time at home. He's away 10 months of the year already.
I mean, she found receipts. He just happened to write present for June on them because he is very careful with his taxes.
He's a real good... Yeah, he kept a very balanced book.
Yeah, and that is admirable. Yeah. And that's what I'm looking for in a man. Someone who can balance my books.
Wait, like an accountant?
Oh, God.
What's happened?
What have I done? No, fuck it. Leave the books unbalanced. No, but I like being organized. Oh, God, I'm so conflicted.
She wrote that the whole experience was degrading and horrible, obviously, and the idea Johnny could love someone else was hard for her to accept. In the end, Vivian regretted not revisiting all those love letters and trying to fight harder for the marriage, which is like, Vivian, no.
You're not the problem here, Vivian.
This is a quote. I should have been relentless at saving it, as relentless as June was at destroying it.
Oof, brutal.
She later wrote. In brackets it said, though she ultimately forgives her.
Oh, this interesting.
This is all in her, she wrote an autobiography later in life, and it was titled... I think it was titled...
Fuck you, June Carter.
In brackets, I forgive you.
I think you're all right.
It was titled something like I Walk the Line, and apparently she was just so loved in her community after they split. Just one of those community members that was just loved by everyone.
Mm.
And her friends were the ones that were saying, he didn't walk the line, you walked the line. You were the one who stayed home and raised the kids. He didn't, the idea of walking the straight line, I guess, as being straight and true or whatever is, I guess, how I interpret it.
Mm.
So I kind of like that as a title for the book. Apparently, he left without saying goodbye.
Oh.
Vivian wrote that he eventually apologized to his daughters, but never to her. I'd have given anything to hear Johnny say he was sorry.
Oh, that's awful.
Anyway. Fuck him, right? This is the point of the story. It's like, fuck you, Johnny Cash.
Mm. And I don't know what his relationship's like with his kids, was like with his kids, but I can't imagine being like, Dad!
Yeah.
Like, what? What do you want?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks.
So, I mean, that's all real sad. This is no excuse, but he was fuck-eyed with different addictions at the time. But, obviously no excuse to be a real... asshole.
Hmm, well, it sounds like you wouldn't want to be around him anyway. He sounds awful.
I'm going to tell a few of the stories. Obviously, he was in a bad place in general. And in these years, he was arrested several times, about seven times in 7 years, I think. But perhaps his most famous run-in with the law occurred in 1965 in El Paso, Texas. He crossed the Mexican border to buy amphetamines, which he was addicted to at the time. And he purchased a heap of them, stuffed them in his socks and then into his guitar case, crossed back over the border. But then I think he was busted on the plane in Texas the next day. So it's like, he didn't get busted crossing the border. It was already once he was and then got, I think is how I read it. Apparently he had 668 dexedrine and 475 Equinil tablets. He avoided jail time because they were over-the-counter drugs, still illegal for him to
have that many
and bring them across, smuggle them in. But it meant he avoided jail time because of what I think the cops went after him thinking it was heroin or something like that. But he copped a fine and a suspended sentence. And though this sort of all wraps up into the bad boy image that I think we associate with him now, apparently at the time was received poorly with his conservative audience, who of course only do fucked up things privately.
Yeah, right.
And so I would say, in my mind, like the people who do the most fucked things are people who present very conservative publicly.
Right.
And that's how it goes in my head. I'm sure some people who present conservatively are actually conservative.
So do you see a very conservative-looking person walking down the street and you're like, they definitely have a sex swing at their house?
Yeah. What do they get up to?
Oh,
I know what you are. Okay.
Okay.
Just wearing a tie.
You got a weird fetish or something, don't you?
You got a sock of dexedrine or some shit in you.
Where is it?
Where is it? Give us the sock, mate.
How do you know it was in a sock?
I can tell.
No, you're all the same, you conservatives. The drug use was wrecking his voice as well, and he was building up a bit of a reputation.
I keep a close watch on this hat of mine.
That's not how I pictured it being wrecked.
Oh, keep it close. Oh,
that's very good.
I keep my eyes on a fan. It was angelic. It was like a boys' choir or something. It was beautiful.
Oh, this is no good. This is not what the people want to see. I like how you think that's angelic.
Oh, keep it close.
Oh, the angels are here. What is this, the rapture?
Gabriel, is that you?
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Silent night. Oh, it's beautiful.
So he was building up a reputation as an unreliable performer, often not rocking up to shows at all.
Pay his way. He's unreliable. I don't know, I panicked.
He would never pay... His hydrolite? So you said?
So he'll never pay his way. I don't know. Fuck you.
He also would wreck backstage areas and hotel rooms, like classic sort of bad boy rock star behaviour.
Sick.
He once had a short affair with country singer Billie Jean Horton. Horton apparently ended it when she found out about Cash's wife and kids. But he found out she was in town staying at this hotel, so he, like, stormed through the hotel trying to find her, banging on her door, and she locked it. She's like, no good, mate. And he cracked the shits, right? He turned around and just smashed antique chandeliers all the way down the hall in this hotel.
Not funny. A little bit funny.
Just, like, scary behavior, yeah, really. But
terrifying.
On another occasion, he drove to California's Los Padres, that's probably not how you say it, National Forest in Ventura County with his nephew. He was binging on pills and booze there, and he apparently went off alone to fish for a bit. When his nephew, Damon, smelt smoke, he found Cash losing control of a fire. And according to LAWeekly.com...
I'm in control. I'm not in control anymore!
To be fair, he was trying to control the fire with his mind.
You just see him
just rubbing his temples
and panic on his face
and going,
Trying to find the key of the fire.
So according to LAWeekly.com, his overheated party truck
became
an igniting torch, scorching hundreds of acres.
Is that what he called himself? The party truck?
I was thinking these guys go to the party truck, which is, and another thing I read, it was like he borrowed his sister's camping van.
Party truck.
So hundreds of acres were burnt.
So it's a big wild bushfire.
Across three mountains.
Holy shit.
And it roasted and killed 49 of the area's 53 endangered Californian condors. Big,
Oh, shit. I shouldn't laugh, but that's crazy.
That's basically almost to extinction.
He nearly made a species go extinct because of his party truck. My party truck, it made an animal go extinct. I'm a bad boy.
Do you reckon he was apologetic?
No.
About killing all those birds?
You'd have to.
I doubt so very much.
He's quoted as saying, and this was across a few different sources. He was quoted as saying, "I don't care about your damn yellow buzzards."
That's amazing.
Well,
it's terrible, but it's so crazy. It's funny.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that.
I did not know that. That is not in the film, funnily enough.
I
also love roasted.
Yeah, roasted is brutal language from the LA Weekly.
It smelt amazing.
They tasted real good.
Yeah, very tender.
Kentucky Fried Condor Buzzard.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, yeah, so he settled with the government out of court for about 80 grand. So of these wild years, he would later say, "I had become habituated to amphetamines and barbiturates and alcohol, all three at the same time. That combination is deadly poisonous. I got up to a habit of as many as 100 pills a day and a case of beer."
That's fucked.
100 pills.
And a case of beer.
I mean, for you, you would struggle to even stomach, even if they were sugar pills, right?
Oh, I can't even swallow one pill. I chew pills because of my weird esophagus.
Yeah, right.
So 100. Oh.
Yeah, well, that sounds like hell for you, right?
That's a form of torture for you.
100. I mean.
But I'm grateful it's 100.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I would have as many as 98 pills a day. Oh, for fuck's sake.
He's like gasping for air gun. Gotta get this off soon. Yeah. Oh, fuck. My mouth's so dry.
I mean, how do you not die?
I guess you slowly build up.
Like a tolerance, I suppose?
Oh, you'd have diarrhea for sure. You'd have to.
Okay.
I would have thought the other way around.
I'm not sure that's what the first thing, why that's the first thing you think of.
24 beers and 100 pills. I'm imagining no other food.
Yeah, good call.
Oh. I reckon he'd be blocked right up. I don't know how the body works.
Well, I mean, 50 of those were laxative pills.
Right.
Yeah, most of them are vitamins.
There was a time where apparently to fit into I read this so early this morning, it's only vague memory, but to fit in some sort of classic old suit of an old country performer, he just binged on diet pills for a while and just wasted away.
Oh, wow. Yuck.
He was very gaunt through some of this period. He also said, "Arrested 7 times in 7 years. No, I'm not. That, I lost it there. I was on the verge of a nervous breakdown and I knew it. I was usually on 100 pills a day, but I got no pleasure from them. No peace. I couldn't stand my life, but I couldn't find a way out of it." Guess that's what addiction is. Fucking brutal.
That's awful.
Despite all the trouble of his personal life and with his live performance, he didn't go a year in the 60s without a top 10 single on the country charts. Every year throughout all this time, he was still banging out hits. In 1967, he won his first of 13 Grammy Awards for Best Country and Western Performance for a duet, trio, or group for Jackson. With
We're gone, Jackson.
June Carter.
13 Grammys is a fair effort.
There was one, I don't remember where we were, somewhere, maybe Northern Territory, and I was on a roadshow a couple of years ago with Reese Nicholson, and the microphone at the stand was one of those old school ones, like entirely silver, big microphone used to sort of share, and we were doing a mic check and I started singing Jackson and Reese just runs straight in and sings the other side. So we're both just standing there singing Jackson. It's very fun.
It's a fun duet.
I associate that song to Reese now, which is kind of nice. He probably doesn't even remember it.
So the first of your 13 Grammys?
Yes.
With Reese?
Yes.
It is a great duet.
Yeah.
Really, really bloody, it's a banger.
It's really fun.
"I'm going to Jackson." It's so fun to sing the Johnny Cash songs.
Mm.
It's because it's slow enough that I can, it almost sounds like I'm singing. His marriage didn't survive the decade. We sort of talked about this before. With Vivian filing for divorce in 1966, And within a couple of years, Cash proposed to Carter on stage while performing in Ontario, Canada. And a week later, they married.
Oh.
Carter hyphenated her name, became June Carter Cash.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great... Some hyphenated names don't work, but yeah. And often when it's like the same letter, but Carter Cash is good. Is great, yeah.
I think because Cash is very short and Carter's only two syllables. Perkins, there's no way that will hyphenate with anything.
Perkins Warnocky. Yeah, it's just...
stupid.
It just sounds...
Cash Perkins?
Cash Perkins.
Cash Perkins is great. Fuck. Well, yeah, that's that. Really good.
Sounds good.
Perkins Cash. Two
of the millionaire quartet. Million dollar quartet.
Yeah.
Carter was a devout Christian. Some described her as a Bible basher. Which I always... When I was a kid, I'm like, oh, that's people who do not like the Bible. But it means quite the opposite. Oh. And it seems that she helped him refocus on his faith and he became very religious. I mean, he already sort of was, but he really refocused on that. And there were a few big moments. There was one time around these years where he went down into a cave apparently to try to lose himself and die. But he felt like he had some sort of an epiphany, or it felt like he had a moment with God. And he saw a little light and it felt a little breeze on his back and that got him back out. And he saw that as being like his rebirth.
Holy shit.
If that's a true story, that feels like something you'd write. It sounds almost like a cliched scene for a guy.
Big time.
Like quite literally, he's like coming out of a cave to start again.
Is that how you see vaginas, as a cave? Is that what you mean by that?
Man cave. I was thinking more like Jesus is being reborn, right, coming out of the tomb.
Yep.
But yeah, I get like that would that even more tomb. Literally. Oh my god.
Yeah.
No.
No, I get it.
So Carter sort of started refocusing him. It doesn't sound like it was instant, but things were starting to turn around from him at this point. A lot of people say. Others probably argue, you know, she's not universally loved. Some people, I think, certainly those siding with his first wife, say that it wasn't all that happy, but it seems to be. Cash, soon after this, released his massive triple platinum-selling albums, recorded live at prisons, 1968's Live at Folsom Prison and 1969's Live at San Quentin. I think San Quentin may have been recorded earlier. And probably the most famous one is Folsom Prison, yeah. Right? He also had a hit, early hit song with Folsom Prison Blues.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably stands as his most iconic album, maybe even inarguably. Due to their success and his troubles with the law, people often assume that Cash himself spent a bunch of time behind bars, but he didn't really ever spend any stretches, only solo nights at a time, you know, for being drunk or whatever.
Yeah.
But he was never put away for a stretch.
I suppose it's a good way to put the prisoners on side if you ever do go to jail.
Yeah.
It's a bit of networking.
That's right.
Assuming you're going to go to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to network.
You got
to
network.
You got to. I mean, you know, it feels dirty, but...
You simply must.
That's how the business works.
Yeah.
The business of being a criminal.
Yes, business of jail.
Cash had long been keen to record an album at Folsom Prison. It's the prison that makes the number plates for California, apparently, or it used to be.
Uh-huh.
Columbia, his record label, though, was not keen, in part due to the expense... And also as bluesy outlaw country music was not seen to be particularly fashionable at the time. To give you an idea, in the year previous to the recording, some of the big albums were The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's, Jimi Hendrix's Experiences, Are You Experienced, and Cream's Disraeli Gears. So, like, you know, it was sort of psychedelic rock and it was a big change in music, and Johnny Cash's music was seen as being pretty old school.
Like your dad's album.
Yeah. Which is funny, yeah. I mean, but obviously in America, it's such a big population. There's all these different ways of going, and it turned out to be a huge crossover hit. Cash did have an ally in Bob Dylan's producer, Bob Johnston. So whilst his label wasn't keen, Bob Johnston proved to be a big supporter, and he helped get the idea over the line. So in Folsom Prison's Dining Hall 2 at 9:40 a.m. on the 13th of January, he played, kicked off the first of two back-to-back concerts, which formed the recordings. The closing song on the album, this is something I didn't know about, was a cover. Do you know anything about this?
No.
The track Greystone Chapel, which is written about the chapel at Folsom Prison. Cash first heard this song the night before, the day before, as it was written by a Folsom Prison inmate, Glenn Shirley. Shirley was in for bank robbery, and he was unaware that the prison chaplain had passed a tape of his song onto Cash the day before. Cash loved it, and they learnt it the night before and surprised Shirley by playing it.
So he was in the crowd?
He was in the crowd. He was up towards the front, apparently. And you can hear Cash saying on the recording, "I hope I do your song justice, Glenn." It was real nice. And that's how the album closes out.
Wow. That'd that's cool.
Cool moment.
Yeah. And it's a cool song. This proved to be quite a big break for Shirley. Though he was still in prison, another of Shirley's songs was recorded a couple of years later, Portrait of My Woman by Eddie Arnold, and that led to more attention and the opportunity to record his own live album while still incarcerated.
Whoa!
And then when released from prison, apparently Shirley was met at the gates by Cash, who took him on the road and brought him into his show. But it became clear to some in the band that Shirley, in the words of bass player Marshall Grant, was a pathological criminal. Threats he made to others in the touring party led to him being dismissed by Cash.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah. Oh, that is. Everything
was such a nice story, but it ends up being quite a sad tale.
Mm.
He struggled with the limelight and ended up working on a cattle farm before shooting a man and hiding out, I think, at his brother's property or something, and eventually shooting himself in the head. So, yeah, super sad story. Cash paid for his funeral. And apparently I think that hit Cash pretty hard. He was really, he liked to think of himself as trying to fight for the downtrodden and the prisoners and that sort of stuff. But this sort of made him think like, oh, fucking hell.
Some people are just bad.
Yeah, and I think what his daughter later said that, you know, his heart was in the right place, but he was never a guy who was going to fix anything for anyone. You know, he had enough of his own demons.
Wow.
But it was like he definitely seemed to have a bloody crack at it. And he fought for a few different causes. In 1969, Cash also debuted his TV variety show.
What?
The Johnny Cash Show.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it was like a talk show and he had musicians on. Apparently it was quite successful.
Really?
And it came about due to the success of the Folsom Prison album, probably.
I just don't really feel like him as the talk show host.
Yeah, no, it's funny, but
let's not forget sketch writer.
No, you're not wrong. Sorry, of course. I forget his true passion.
Yeah, comedy.
And he got big guests, and I think it went relatively well.
Sound like you said big gas, and then that made me think of gas bags from the Hindenburg. And
people enjoyed gas bags. There's a few tweets about
gas bags. Funny.
People love the gas bag.
People love gas bags.
You never know.
Dave came armed with what he thought was a great report.
Well, what he thought.
Really, the takeaway moment was just laughing at the word gas bag or the phrase gas bags.
If you missed that episode, a few people have said best since Shackleton.
Whoa.
Which is high praise.
D-dubs.
And obviously, Shackleton is our Folsom Prison blues. No, Folsom Prison, live at Folsom Prison, anyway.
So far. Come on, we can talk.
Yeah, I think we're doing a run now.
Come on, Matt. Dave can top it.
Oh, sorry. Misunderstood what he was saying there.
He's being generous.
We
cannot top it. You and I, Dave can.
Obviously, those shows are made good because of the Sass Twins.
Yeah, you're right.
Obviously, definitely.
The Folsom Prison album also scored him a couple of Grammys, which, you know, isn't super surprising. I also read this stat that blew me away a little. Apparently in 1969 he was the biggest selling artist in the world. In 1969, really? Like the summer of love. Johnny Cash was the biggest. That year, the Beatles released Abbey Road. Went on the moon.
Well, that has to do with the music charts. I'm just letting you know I know a fact.
I can't believe Buzz Aldrin wasn't the world's biggest selling music artist that year. That is actually very surprising. The world's biggest selling artist.
Crazy.
In 1970, Cash and Carter Cash had their only child, John Carter Cash, who himself went on to win a Grammy for Best Traditional Folk Album in 2004. He was also, I think, the executive producer, had a key role on the film after his parents died. But apparently, Roseanne, one of his daughters was like, it was traumatic watching the movie. She's like, she recognized the scenes, but the characters did not seem familiar to her. It was like they weren't accurate, but it was just traumatic for her to watch. And she's like, what?
And fair enough.
Yeah.
It definitely comes from a very sympathetic place.
Yes.
The film. It's kind of like poor Johnny. And you do feel bad for
the only son of
Vivian. You do feel
June and Johnny. So, imagine if it was one of Vivian's kids making the movie. It would have been a bit of a different slant on it all.
Yeah.
The 70s also began with 6 top 5 charting albums on the country charts. So he wasn't just back, he was smashing it.
6 albums?
6 top 5 charts. And that's just in the early. He's
doing like 2 a year.
Did so many. Yeah, he did a lot of albums. I think he recorded a lot of songs multiple times and stuff. And he did a lot of covers, although he wrote a lot of his own songs as well. But he was super prolific. The hot streak didn't last long, though, as he began abusing amphetamines again in the late 70s. And in 1983, he entered rehab at the famous Betty Ford Clinic. Is that the one that on The Simpsons they do, I'm checking in? Is that Betty Ford?
I think it might be.
Checking in. Hey, that's just my aspirin.
No more drugs or alcohol.
He got clean, but he followed this loop of getting clean and relapsing, receiving treatment again in 89 and 92. But it's not like he wasn't making things happen through these years as well. He continued to release albums to varying degrees of success. And he also dabbled in acting with roles on the big and small screens. And in 1980, he was inducted to the Country Music Hall of Fame at 48 years of age, making him at the time the youngest living inductee. At the time, when I read that, I'm like, youngest living? But then I thought there were probably people who died younger than that who were inducted.
Right, sure, yeah.
I think is what that means. As time went on, Cash looked to collaborate with other artists more and more. I mean, he was always very collaborative, but maybe the most famous of these was with the Highwaymen. Have you heard of them? Sort of a country supergroup with Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings.
Wow.
And they released 3 albums from the mid-80s to the mid-90s. In 1992, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was one of the few who's been inducted into both country and rock and roll
Halls
of Fame. I think Elvis is another one who has. I thought I Googled a few different versions of people who were inducted into both, and I couldn't find a list or anything. But I kind of assume that Hank Williams probably was.
Don't assume.
Should never assume. And also probably, I don't think there'll be heaps anyway. Because, I mean, a lot of the people, I looked through the Country Hall of Fame, I was like, who the fuck?
Who is this?
Lee Kernaghan was not in there. And I'm like, WTF.
What about Slim?
I don't know. Slim should be in there, surely.
Slim should be in there.
Slim Dusty, that is, not Shady.
I think, was Slim Dusty, was he the one, did he write I've Been Everywhere, Man? Was that, that was someone else, wasn't it? But he covered it. But I think Johnny Cash did a version of that.
Famous
Aussie country song. But he also covered a Nick Cave song, The Mercy Seat. And duetted with Nick Cave in later years as well.
Wow. That's really cool.
And that's, just a couple of deep, great
brooding man.
Voices. Yeah, two deep voices together.
His last long-term project was when he teamed up with legendary music producer Rick Rubin to release the American recordings. You familiar with Rick Rubin?
Yes.
This would lead to yet another revival of Cash's career after a relatively lean period of critical success and relevance, really. Rubin had already made his name producing a diverse range of huge albums. Have you heard of Rick Rubin?
No.
He's like, he did the Beastie Boys' first album.
Licensed Ill. Yeah.
He's done like every...
He did Run DMC's Raising Hell, like one of that was their huge one. Slayer's Rain and Blood, which is like their classic. Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood, Sugar Sex Magic. Holy so he'd already shit. Done all these albums for them. He's gone on to...
Done like Metallica and...
Yes. He sort of made Metallica...
He's still done Madonna. He's done all kinds of...
Yeah.
Oh, incredible.
Just across all sorts of really genres. Diverse. And he also, yeah, he really brought a big upswing to Cash's career right at the end. With this series of albums. The first one, the American Recordings album, was released in 1994. It was the first Cash album to chart in the US country top 30 in over 10 years. And it opened up a new audience to him. And it also scored a Grammy for Best Contemporary Folk Album. Cash followed up with further albums in this series with Rubin, the fourth of which, released in 2002, subtitled The Man Comes Around, was the 87th studio album, and also the final.
No!
Yeah, 87th and final in his lifetime.
That is insane.
I think the title track on that, do you know that song, The Man Comes Around? I think that's probably my favorite Cash song, and it was like released a year before he died. He's just releasing bangers right to the end. That album also has his cover of Hurt, which you're probably familiar with, that Nine Inch Nails song.
Yeah, it's really good. That's often like cited as one of the best songs ever.
Yeah, it's often in the lists of best covers, and even yeah, just great songs. He passed away the following year on the 12th of September 2003 from complications with diabetes. He lived only a couple of months longer than his wife June, who passed away on the 15th of May. In his final months, Cash and Rubin continued on the project with recordings that would make up American Five, which was subtitled 100 Highways. There was even another one released beyond that, American Six. He finished up the recordings just a week before his death. And according to Rubin, this is quoting Rubin, once June passed, the person, not the month, he had the will
sorry, it's funny.
To live long enough to record, but that was pretty much all. A day after June passed, he said, I need to have something to do every day, otherwise there's no reason for me to be here. The album was a critical and commercial success, hitting number one not only on the US country chart, but also on it was number one on the mainstream US incredible. Chart. In 2005... A biopic. I say biopic, but I hear...
Biopic? Some people say biopic. I say biopic, Dave.
Biopic sounds to me like something to do with your eyes.
I think I say biopic, but I...
Of course you fucking do. But you say cartilage.
They're both right. They're both fine.
Biop. But it's biography, biographical, bio...
You don't say it. Oh, I was supposed to say... Biopic.
Oh, yeah, no, bio. Yeah, right. Yeah, look, I just talked myself out of it. In 2005, a biopic starring... Joaquin Phoenix as Cash and Reese Witherspoon as June Carter Cash, as we talked about before, was released to much acclaim. Witherspoon won the Academy Award for Best Actress and Phoenix was nominated for Best Actor.
Did their own singing,
yeah.
Which is, like, it's actually really great. Like, their singing, I mean.
I think it's...
Yeah, that's impressive. I didn't know that.
Spot on. And they, yeah, I think... They're pretty Jackson's sure I read they great. Did... They did a live performance with... the actors and the living members of the band all together somewhere around that time, which is cool. In 2010, Rolling Stone magazine named Cash the 31st greatest artist of all time. And I've put this down as a fun fact, but we all know there are no fun facts. But I kind of wanted just to finish the report with Vivian Cash, who outlived Johnny and June by a couple of years, whatever. But in between June dying and Johnny dying, Vivian went and visited Cash and told him she was writing this book. And apparently Cash said to her, well, about time or something like that, which is weird. And he apparently agreed to write the foreword for it, but he died before he got the chance. But I quite like this because she, you know, sometimes it feels like sometimes in a breakup, people will focus on one or the other, and it's often not the person who really was committed to them. It's the other person who's come in. It's like, to me, it's like you'd be, logically, you should be pissed off at Johnny. He's the one who fucked you over. June, you know, she had no commitment to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. But anyway, Vivian definitely was more brutal against June in her afterwards, which is like, obviously, mourn a relationship however you like. But tell me if this is a fun fact. I don't think it is. In Vivian Cash's autobiography, she denied that Carter had anything to do with the writing of Ring of Fire, which is obviously credited to her. This is a quote from the book. She didn't write that song any more than I did. The truth is Johnny wrote that song while pilled up and drunk about a certain private female body part.
Oh.
Oh.
Ring of Fire.
It shouldn't feel like fire. And if it feels like it's on fire, you should like get an ointment for that.
Call a doctor.
See a doctor.
But what, isn't that amazing? Like, she believes that and...
Yeah.
I assume she believed that to write it.
Yeah. That's a good assumption. Yeah. I think it's so funny because I totally understand why, and I think it's probably quite common that she's, hates June.
Yeah.
But you're so right that it's not June who said she'd marry you and live with you and have a life with you.
Yeah, and had four kids with you.
Yeah, it's Johnny. And no, you shouldn't have fought harder for him.
Yeah.
Because he...
Fuck him.
...wouldn't do that for you.
Yeah, no. He didn't. He apparently never apologized and didn't say goodbye.
Never apologized.
That's
fuck
true.
That guy.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, I'm sure there are different versions of all of that. Those things were coming from her autobiography, and she also said that June Carter didn't write this song that she famously wrote.
Mm.
So,
you know, grain of salt.
Yeah. I mean, I got all of this information from the internet, and I mean, that is notoriously credible. That's a report.
Great report. Stuff, Matthew.
Matthew, our little golden boy.
I enjoyed that. So you got the listeners to vote on, the Patreon supporters.
Yes.
Our upper Patreon tier level people to vote on that topic.
And you let me know that it was Valentine's Day around this episode time, or is it as this episode comes out?
Yeah, I think maybe the day before our time.
Right, so I put up...
Valentine's Day is a Wednesday.
No, sorry, it comes out on our Valentine's Day. So I said to Matt, maybe we could have a love story. So thank you for providing
a beautiful
tale.
Because, I mean, I didn't know a lot about that and I didn't think about it. I went through the hat and I'm trying to find love-specific things. In the end, I decided to put up three beloved entertainers.
Oh, nice one. Yeah, our listeners wouldn't really suggest romantic topics.
Yeah.
They tend to go for mysteries or serial killers.
Yeah, most stories end up having love in them. Like, that's just a bit of a trope, really.
It's a part of life.
Yeah, it's a part of life. You live, you laugh, you love.
You lumber.
You lament, you know?
I think
five L's.
Can add Johnny Cash to our list of people that you're disappointed to hear about their life. Roald Dahl, Charlie Chaplin. Though with Johnny Cash, I find him less surprising to be an asshole than Roald Dahl or Charlie Chaplin.
Yes.
I could be like, yeah, I can see that. He seemed like a bit of a crazy rocker.
And it does feel like he did find a lot of redemption beyond, you know, those real fucked up years, but...
Mm.
And he wrote a lot of good songs.
87 albums.
Well, and then he a couple have come out since he died as well.
Oh, shit.
There was a lost album that his son found that was released and went to number one in the charts, the mainstream charts.
It's insane.
Really cool. Obviously a pretty cool story regardless of how we feel about him. Do we credit who suggested this topic?
We didn't mention that, but it was a couple of people suggested him, including... This guy with a great name, Jordan Quasi. Almost Quasi. Definitely not how you pronounce it. Quazi.
Quasi.
Quasi.
Quasi Jordan.
He's from Hertfordshire in England.
Hertfordshire.
Thank you, Jordan.
Hertfordshire. And also Andrew Cox.
No comment.
From Knoxville. Andrew Cox from Knoxville.
Knoxville, home of the Wigsphere. One of my favorite things.
comes up a bit, the
Knoxville, Tennessee. It so, certainly does. Thanks so much to those guys that suggested that. If you want to suggest a topic, you can do that at any time. There is a link in the description of this episode. It says submit topic idea. You click on that, fill out a little form, tell us why we should do the topic and what kind of topic it is, and we may well do that as our next episode.
We may well.
May well.
We may badly.
Yeah, we may do it. We may do it badly. We may do it badly. And, of course, if you want to support the show, if you listen every week, you have a good time with us, you want to keep the show going, you
have
can...
Have a good time? Hey?
Hey, hey, let us know by giving us Johnny Cash at patreon.com/dogoonpod.
We accept condoms or cash, yeah, we'll as donations.
Johnny Condom.
Yeah.
Is that a, is that a button that, on Patreon?
Haven't you seen that big jar of condoms in your office? What do you think that was? An art piece?
Yeah.
It is.
It's pretty artistic.
You're right.
If you pledge to our Patreon monthly, you get stuff in exchange, like a bonus episode once a month. We do video chats and Matt does like a little newslettery thing. You get access to tickets to live shows before anyone else and you get a shout out on the show. We'd like to shout out and say thanks to a couple of our Patreon people right here, right now. Matt, who would you like to thank for giving us if their I could, from, Johnny Cash?
From Acton, Massachusetts.
So convincing, and then you lost it.
I don't know that it was convincing in the first place.
Massachusetts. Boston, Massachusetts. That's what I said. Boston, Massachusetts.
From you're adding road trip. Some T's in there, not right.
Yeah, I'm not doing that right. Jake Bartlett.
Jake Bartlett.
We normally do a thing. Are we doing a thing with these?
Yeah, we definitely should.
If so, maybe they're a man in a colour? No, we've done too many colours.
What about if we do... Johnny Cash did an album live from prison. Where would Jake do his album?
Oh, great.
I think Jake Bartlett would do his album live from the swimming centre.
Oh!
Yes.
In the water.
Yeah.
Underwater or just on top?
Underwater.
I was going to say, terrible acoustics above ground in the swimming center. You know how it's always echoey there?
Yeah.
Even worse below, but good on you, Jake.
No, he's got the technology.
Yeah.
We have the technology.
Oh, famous. Oh, that's a great Custard album. We have the technology. Is that what you're referencing there?
No, I think I was referencing the $6 million man.
Great. Maybe that's all they were referencing.
Yeah, I think so.
I did not realize that. And I'd also love to thank, if I can, is this okay with you guys?
Please.
Cameron Hidalgo from La Mesa, California.
Wow.
I think I said Cameron right there. The rest I sort of fell away. But Cameron Hidalgo from La Mesa, California.
Okay. And Cameron would do his album live from Starbucks.
Oh, wow.
Coffee lover.
Yeah.
Chain coffee lover.
Mm-hmm. Corporate sellout.
I've had a Starbucks in America, which is where they're from, I believe.
We have them here, too.
I think they're from Seattle.
Are they really?
I believe so.
So it's Fraser Crane. Baby, I hear the blues are calling.
Toss salad and scrambled eggs.
Oh, my. What is a boy to do?
Maybe I seem a bit confused. Well, maybe.
If you
but
order
I got you pegged.
But I don't know what to do with the toss salad and scrambled eggs. They're coming again. Dun,
dun, dun. Good night, Seattle. We love you.
Is that the song that...
That bit's hard.
Is that the song that Mr. Hidalgo is performing at Starbucks?
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
Yes. He's doing a cover.
And people did seem a bit confused. But, baby, he had them pegged.
May I thank some people?
Please, Jess.
I would like
to thank... sounded more desperate than I wanted to
say. Please, Jess.
Please.
I would like to thank a local lad from New South Wales, NSW, Jake Went.
Ah, Jake Went.
Thank you, Jake. Went. And where would Jake do his live album
where
from?
Where would he go? Jake Went. Live from a pet shop.
Oh.
Yeah, I actually thought I was about to say on horseback.
In the pet shop.
Yeah.
He's just riding. It's a warehouse.
I'm picturing him though. Somehow he's mucked up. He's backwards, right? So he's singing off the back of the horses as the crowd follows him around in a circle.
Wow. What an experience.
Maybe strumming on a steel guitar that he bought from Red Canoodle.
Oh.
Canoodle. He's canoodling on his guitar. And does he look stressed? Like, is he sort of panicking the horses out of control?
No.
No, chill. He's in control. He's
cool. Chill AF.
Wow.
Good on you, Jake Went. Oh, keep cool, riding Jake. The good ride.
And I'd also like to thank from Michigan, Eric Flynn. Very cool name. My high school sports team was Flynn. We were yellow.
Oh, named after Eric?
Eric and Errol Flynn. Very similar names.
Yes.
Iconic Australian actor.
So he'll do his...
From the Spirit of Tasmania.
Life from the Spirit of Tasmania. Because Errol Flynn's famously from Tasmania.
And he was a swashbuckling actor, so obviously always on a ship.
Yeah, I think we should definitely explain to our Michigan listener that the Spirit of Tasmania is a ship.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's like a small cruise ship you can catch overnight from mainland Australia to Tasmania.
I love the idea that you would think that's just conceptually he would do it live from the Spirit of Tasmanians.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Maybe that is where he's going to be. Eric Flynn.
Very cool. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. I would like to thank all the way from Dallas, Texas, an airport that a couple of weeks ago I visited. So we were in the same vicinity for a couple of hours, though my stopover was not enough and I had to embarrassingly run through the terminal. Never done that before.
Oh, I hate that.
And someone actively laughed at us. They went, ha, ha, ha. Oh, I wanted to tell them to fuck off, but then I remembered I was in Texas where they all have guns. So
strange.
Big multi-galloned hats.
Yeah. Honestly, there were people in the airport with big hats on, I was really loving it. So I would love to come back to Texas and experience it properly. But from Dallas, Texas, I would like to thank Monica Lopez.
Monica.
Oh, great name.
Monica Lopez. It's a beautiful name, isn't it?
Cracking name.
Where would Monica do her concert live from? Monica Lopez live from?
Ohio.
Live from Ohio?
Yeah, wow. She's not from there, but that's where she's doing her show from.
In the center?
In the center, she looks up the longitude and latitude. Mm. She figures out the exact coordinates of the center of Ohio.
That's our dream gig.
What a lucky duck.
Yeah, and then she performs there, and it goes off.
I bet that would bring, even more tourism to Ohio.
Then already. The tourism industry will explode.
Fuck, what a place. Do you remember when I realized that Ohio is not that far from Gary? We can go easily road trip between the two and also get to Pittsburgh.
You still, you say that like you're convincing us. We're on board.
Oh, thank God.
We're doing it.
I need...
Because I'm doing it either way, but it'll be more fun with you guys.
I need to get a photo of you in front of a sign that says, "Welcome to Gary." Oh, I need that in my life. We all need that. Matt, we need this.
I need it too. One of my breweries that I frequent a lot up in Bright in the country has released a limited edition beer called Gary.
No.
That is...
That's the sick beer idea alarm.
Does it have anything to do with...
It goes off every time Matt mentions beer. You have a problem.
Stop abusing beer. Get out of here, beer.
Dave, do you have someone else to thank?
I got one last person. This person is listening. Oh, I imagine they're listening from their house in Bavaria, Germany.
Where that is exactly where Johnny Cash was
stationed.
Yeah. Stationed, listening into the Soviet communique.
Very cool. And I can only imagine that this person is listening into the Soviet communique still. Moritz Remuter.
Oh my God.
Moritz. M-O-R. And I think that Moritz is live from a beer house because Moritz is the name of a great beer from Barcelona.
Bavaria is a beer mecca as well.
So put those together. Moritz live from the beer house. Zibierhausen.
Maybe the Lauenbrau beer house. At Oktoberfest, the Lauenbrau, or I'm sure it's pronounced totally like Löwenbräu or something, but the tent there has, or at least it did years ago when I was there, had a big mechanical roaring lion, which I think every hour would roar. So good.
Awesome. That's so cool.
I know. I know.
It's very cool that we can thank people from Dallas and then go to Bavaria, Germany, and that these people are supporting the show. Thank you so much. It's really mind-blowing.
Amazing.
I don't say this lightly. You are fucking legends.
You!
And make me being up till 4:30 a.m. today feel worth it.
Slightly yeah. worth it.
No, I did. Like, I really did get deep, and I was listening to back catalogue Johnny Cash as I went as well. I almost gave it away to you guys as I walked in, and I was kept accidentally singing Johnny Cash. You know, I'm so paranoid about giving away topics. I'm like, I said, so what have you been up to, Jess?
Yeah. How are you? Nice to see you.
You're buying stuff. Will that be cash or card? Shut up. Shut the fuck up.
They'll know. They'll know.
Even though Matt's...
Because Johnny Cash, he was a real card.
It's a real card about town. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for everyone for listening. Get in contact at any time through email, dogoonpod@gmail.com, and the social medias at dogoonpod.
Thanks so much for listening. As we always say here on the show, yes? Bloody suck a fuck, you fucking ducks. No, I don't say that.
All right, I'm going to save it and say... I'm
so tired.
Goodbye.
Later.
Bye. Suck a fuck. You duck. Fucking duck.
Quack, quack.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.